Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. Suicide bombers have killed at least 10 people in Chibok, the Nigerian town where Boko Haram kidnapped more than 200 schoolgirls nearly 2 years ago. Witnesses say one bomber detonated explosives Wednesday at a checkpoint where people were being searched, and at least two others blew themselves up in the town's market. There are conflicting reports on whether the bombers were male or female, and there was no immediate claim of responsibility. 2015 was a year of increasing repression across much of Africa, according to the annual report from Human Rights Watch. The rights group says many African governments imposed new restrictions or pressure on opponents, journalists, and rights activists. This is the group's executive director, Kenneth Roth.
What we've noticed over the last year in particular is that the autocrats of the world, the authoritarian governments, are running scared in the face of civil society. This has become particularly acute now that civil society has been empowered by social media, particularly social media on a mobile phone. Because what that means is that it is much easier for civic groups to mobilize large numbers of people on the street in order to protest governmental policy.
A roadside bomb struck an armored personnel carrier in the north of Egypt's Sinai Peninsula Wednesday, killing an army colonel and three soldiers, according to Egyptian security and health officials. The official said the blast was just south of El Arish and wounded another 12 soldiers, several of whom were in critical condition. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity. You're listening to VOA News. A committee of key Syrian opposition groups is expected to decide Wednesday on whether to participate in UN brokered talks in Geneva. UN Syria envoy Stefan de Mistura sent out invitations to the negotiations Tuesday, but did not disclose who was on the list. The United States and China have reaffirmed their commitment to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, but have not agreed on a new set of penalties after North Korea's recent nuclear test. After meeting Beijing on Wednesday, the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi and U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said the two countries have made cooperative progress on issues such as climate change, but remain divided over how to deal with North Korea.
We look forward to working with China, which China agreed today to do, to engage in an accelerated effort at the United Nations, instructing both of our representatives to work together to try to achieve an understanding about the strong resolution that introduces significant new measures to curtail North Korea's ability to advance its prescribed nuclear and ballistic missile programs.
Meanwhile, the Chinese foreign minister said Wednesday that his country was prepared to support a new UN resolution against Pyongyang's nuclear program. The UN envoy to Libya warned on Wednesday that the political process in the country's parliament was taking too long, which would allow the further expansion of the Islamic State group in the region. Martin Kobler spoke to a news conference in Tunis.
I urge the respect, and here I have the authority of the Security Council of the United Nations behind me, I urge the respect for the stipulations of the agreement. And it says if there are changes, if some things cannot be accepted, there is a mechanism in place.
On Monday, Libya's House of Representatives voted against the unity government proposed under the peace deal, giving rivals 10 days to come up with a new, smaller cabinet. The United Nations Wednesday launched an appeal for $393 million in humanitarian assistance to Afghanistan this year to meet the acute life-saving needs of millions of vulnerable people. Mark Bowden is the UN humanitarian coordinator, and on Wednesday he said the support would be for food, health care, nutrition, safe water, and sanitation for an estimated 3.5 million people. U.S. President Barack Obama has called for faster research on the quick-moving Zika virus, which is spread by mosquitoes and has linked to a rise in birth defects in Brazil. Mr. Obama Tuesday urged better diagnostic tests and a development of vaccines and treatments against the virus. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
During the Nairobi launch of the 2016 Human Rights Watch Global Report, HRW Africa Director Daniel Bekele said poverty, unemployment, massive population growth, bad governance, and weak institutions continue to set the stage for widespread human rights abuses.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, a new report on global freedom names Africa as the world's most volatile region, and Cameroon closes most of its northern markets on the border with Nigeria.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Human Rights Watch released its 2016 global report today, reviewing human rights practices in more than 90 countries from the end of 2014 through November 2015. For the organization's Nairobi launch, Somalia and Kenya researchers remarked on their findings in those East African nations. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
During the Nairobi launch of the 2016 Human Rights Watch Global Report, HRW Africa Director Daniel Bekele said poverty, unemployment, massive population growth, bad governance, and weak institutions continue to set the stage for widespread human rights abuses. But the politics of fear is the topic of this year's report, and Bekele highlighted the increasing number of small to large-scale armored violent conflicts in the region. Bekele said extremists, including fundamentalist groups Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and Al-Qaeda, are responsible for much of the violence, committing senseless killings, horrible abuses, and atrocities.
What is an equally worrying trend is how much the security forces' response to the security threat is increasingly downplaying and in some cases probably totally abandoning human rights. And how much security forces response that is riddled with abuses is actually, you know, sort of contributing to a cycle of abuses.
Arguing that this tenuous security situation may be tied to the intensification of political repression in a number of African countries, Bekele said some governments are adopting what he called a do-whatever-it-takes mentality in restricting freedom of expression and association.
We have seen a spike on attack on journalists, human rights defenders, and political opponents, and overall, you know, sort of like a very heavy crackdown on protests as well.
Bekele also highlighted the concern that Western countries and authoritarian regimes seem to be forming alliances in the face of these security threats.
And Western countries that have traditionally been strong on promoting, protecting, and defending human rights have shown alliance with authoritarian regimes in clamping down on civil and political space.
HRW's Somalia researcher Letitia Bader said that Somalia developed some key policies in 2015 pertaining to sexual and gender-based violence and the country's widespread internally displaced population, but that those policies have not been implemented, and therefore there have been no real changes on the ground. She also mentioned an uptick in fighting in the country due to the ongoing military operation against Al-Shabaab, but also in the drive to establish federal states in Somalia.
So who is able to get a seat at the negotiating table in Somalia in the creation of federalism has often been at a significant consequence to civilians on the ground.
Otsieno Namwaya, HRW's Kenya researcher, highlighted an increase in Al-Shabaab attacks in Kenya, primarily on unarmed civilians.
However, what has really worried us is the response of the Kenyan authorities to the attacks by the Al-Shabaab. The KDF, the Kenya police, that's the regular police, and the anti-terror police, and the GSU, a combination of all these units, have been implicated in a wide range of abuses at the coast in northeastern Kenya and in Nairobi.
But in spite of these negative findings, HRW did cite some improvements on the continent, such as peaceful elections in Nigeria and Botswana, progress in the expansion of economies and socioeconomic services in some African countries, and an increased awareness of maternal mortality and child marriage as rights issues. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Every year since 1973, Freedom House, a New York-based NGO, has tracked the state of civil liberties and political rights throughout the world. Its 2016 Freedom in the World report assesses conditions in 210 countries. Jennifer Dunham is Freedom House's director of research. She told VOA's Adam Phillips that once again, Africa was the most volatile region in the world.
Well, one of the main reasons that Africa was the most volatile region was moves by certain leaders to either manipulate term limits or extend the constitutional limits for presidential terms. The main example of this is in Burundi, where Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term sparked both civil unrest, a failed coup, and ongoing political violence. It also led to the shutdown of almost all of the independent media in that country, which is incredibly concerning for us. For example, in Burundi, there was an agreement that ended the civil war about 10 years ago, the Arusha Accords, where he agreed not to do this. In Congo Republic, the president engineered an October constitutional referendum that allowed him to forego term limits and extend his rule to 2016. We also saw in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo the beginnings of President Kabila trying to maneuver to find ways to extend his term, although his proposal to amend the constitution was met with very serious protests back in January.
Can you tell me if these were done according to constitutional law? And if so, why is this an abridgment, per se, of political rights or civil liberties?
In general, it's considered to be best practice for there to be limits on a ruler's stay in office. So when we see presidents trying to extend their rule and become essentially rulers for life, that's a very disturbing development, and often they happen in the context of very repressive regimes who have already moved against the opposition and independent media, civil society, to kind of quash dissent in advance of any type of constitutional referendum that might be held.
So, was there any positive signs in terms of the elections?
Yes, I'm happy to report. For example, the elections in Nigeria were seen as a very positive step for Nigeria. It was the first time that the opposition had won an election at the national level and the first time that the presidency had changed hands peacefully. We saw some problems with the Nigerian elections. It wasn't a great election, but it was definitely much better than the previous elections in terms of conduct by the Electoral Commission, as well as there was a lot less violence this time than there was last time. And we've seen some encouraging signs so far from President Buhari, but we're still waiting to see how he does in the fight against Boko Haram and in the fight against corruption, which were the two main platforms that he ran on. But Nigeria, their security forces are notorious for violating the human rights of detainees and indiscriminate killings and things like that. It is often under the cloak of anti-terrorism, and that's why they've been getting away with it. But we'll see how Buhari does. His pledge to wipe out Boko Haram was a very ambitious pledge, so we really hope that groups continue to press the government to not only help with the problem of Boko Haram, but also to get the security forces in line.
What about Kenya?
Kenya continued to see attacks by al-Shabaab in 2015, and its security forces continued to crack down in an indiscriminate way, including extrajudicial killings, disappearances, and also they've been harassing non-governmental organizations in attempts to deregister these organizations, as they've been also targeting media outlets and attempting to pass more restrictive laws regarding what the media can publish and things like that.
I understand that Ethiopia had a very difficult year in terms of this balance between anti-terrorism and human liberties.
With Ethiopia, what was really concerning this year was their crackdown on the Oromo protests. The Oromo population is one of the biggest ethnic groups in Ethiopia, and the Ethiopian government is expanding the land around the capital, Addis Ababa, and they are essentially taking Oromo land to do this, and the Oromo are protesting. And in response, the Ethiopian government is cracking down very severely on these protesters.
In the name of terrorism?
Well, they're using anti-terror laws that are on the books to crack down, but it's obvious that the Oromo protesters are not terrorists. they're mainly just trying to protect their land.
That was Jennifer Dunham, Director of Research for Freedom House. She spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Cameroon has closed most of its northern markets on the border with Nigeria. The action was taken after a series of bomb attacks Monday left at least 35 people dead and 70 wounded in the town of Bodu. Government spokesperson Issa Choroma Bakari says it was the 30th attack by suspected Boko Haram militants on Cameroon since the start of the new year. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Yaoundé.
Businessman Inusa Yege says shock and consternation has gripped the town of Bodu, where Monday's attack took place. He says it will take time for them to recover in spite of the heavy deployment of troops. The 33-year-old says the decision by the government to close all border markets in their locality may backfire, especially now that Boko Haram fighters are recruiting young people to steal and seize money and goods from farmers and traders.
Aujourd'hui, quand vous arrivez au marché, les boutiques sont vides. Les commerçants n'ont plus de l'argent pour.
He says traders are becoming poorer because all their shops have been sealed. He says youth who use commercial motorcycles to transport goods and people from the market to supply towns in Nigeria no longer have jobs, and they may now be tempted to join Boko Haram fighters who promise them better lives. Mijiyawa Bakari, the governor of the far north region of Cameroon, says the decision to close markets on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria until further notice was taken for security reasons because the four female suicide bombers who attacked Bodu were disguised as traders and hid explosives in bags of vegetables they pretended to sell.
The decisions have been taken to close some market in the border, but people are persisting to go to sell and to buy things. You know that Boko Haram is looking where people are gathering to do this and that.
After Monday's attack, Cameroon soldiers launched raids on the Nigerian town of Ashigashia, from where they believe the suicide bombers came. Cameroon's spokesperson, Issa Choroma Bakari, says 17 insurgents were killed in the operation. He says Cameroon has counted at least 30 attacks on its territory this year.
Faced with such harassment, both ungrounded and unjustified, our defense and security forces have always retaliated, leading the enemy to incur serious setbacks that have considerably weakened the group and reduced it to mere acts of cowardice, especially suicide bombings, which have become its modus operandi.
In Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, groups of people have been visiting and sympathizing with Bodo's elite. Ngufo Jacob, leader of Cameroon's University Students Association, says that by visiting with people from Bodo, his group shows solidarity with Cameroon and Nigerian forces fighting Boko Haram terrorism.
I came out to show solidarity with my brothers and sisters in the north who are suffering from the onslaught of the Boko Haram insurgents. I came out also to show to the military that we are one, we are together. We may not have guns to join them in the north, but they should know that we have them at heart, we are praying for them, we are supporting them.
Cameroon believes the militants have resorted to attacking mosques, markets, churches and palaces of traditional rulers because the terrorist group's firepower has been drastically reduced following attacks on their strongholds within the past 2 months by Cameroon and Nigerian troops. Boko Haram's 6-year insurgency has killed more than 20,000 people and displaced close to 2.3 million, according to Amnesty International and the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Nigerian villagers living on the border with Cameroon have accused Cameroon's military of killing about 40 of their neighbors Monday. Residents of Guadale say Cameroon troops crossing the border to pursue Boko Haram militants shot and killed villagers. There have been several other complaints in recent weeks that Cameroon soldiers have killed Nigerian civilians while in pursuit of Boko Haram.
Nigeria is on edge over an outbreak of Lassa fever. Health officials have confirmed only 57 cases of the disease, but more than half of those individuals have died. Chris Stein reports with Ibrahima Yakubu in Kaduna and Ardo Hazard in Bauchi, Nigeria.
Nigeria's health ministry says 34 people have died from Lassa fever since the outbreak began in the north late last year. Lagos reported its first case earlier this month, and the disease has spread further south to Edo and Akwa Ibom states. In its early stages, symptoms include headache and fever. In later stages, the symptoms can include bleeding from the mouth and other orifices. The symptoms are similar to those of the Ebola virus. Both Ebola and Lassa are considered hemorrhagic fevers. The Ebola outbreak in West Africa that began in late 2013 killed over 11,000 people, including 8 in Nigeria. Lassa is transmitted through contact with rat excrement. Hassan Garba, a hospital director in the northern city of Bauchi, says rodents are easily able to travel across Nigeria.
So when you're moving food material like grains from the north to the south or to the east or to the west of the country, you most probably may be moving with rats.
That's prompted a spike in people buying rat poison. Adamu Abubakar is a shopper in the city of Kaduna.
This fever brought by rat. So that is why I'm rushing to the market and I buy rat medicine in order to kill all the rat that is in my house.
Merchants like Odundele Benga say they can't keep up with the demand.
In fact, people are rushing the rat poison now. I don't even have enough to sell for now.
Health authorities caution that rat poison is itself toxic and should be used with care. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth has scolded Europe and the United States for their treatment of migrants from the Near East and Africa. He says government policies are, in his words, blatant Islamophobia and shameless demonizing of refugees. HRW's annual report is being unveiled today in Istanbul. Turkey is now home to 2.2 million Syrian refugees and the point of departure for most migrants fleeing to Europe. Roth writes in the report that Western reaction to the migrant crisis is the kind of division and animosity that terrorist recruiters love to exploit.
Meanwhile, European countries are speeding up deportations. Greek Migration Minister Ioannis Mouzalas says today screening centers in the Greek islands could process and send back to Turkey within 24 hours thousands who do not qualify for refugee status. In Germany, the parliament is considering a bill to immediately deport foreigners convicted of homicide, bodily harm, sexual assault, violent theft, serial shoplifting, and youths convicted of crimes. The Greek Coast Guard today recovered the bodies of 7 migrants, 2 children, and 5 adults who drowned when their boat sank today off the Greek island of Kos. 2 survivors were rescued.
In the U.S., a federal judge has acquitted a 21-year-old American of 3 counts of sexually abusing children at a Nairobi, Kenya orphanage last year. The judge in Oklahoma City said prosecutors failed to prove Matthew Lane Durham had planned to travel to Kenya to abuse the children. However, the judge barred defense lawyers from appealing a jury decision in June on related charges. Durham was found guilty of 4 counts of sexually abusing several girls between the ages of 5 and 15 and a 12-year-old boy at Upendo Children's Home. Durham has not yet been sentenced on those convictions.
The World Health Organization says there has been a sharp increase in smoking by school-aged children in Zimbabwe. That's despite the fact that selling tobacco products to children is illegal there. The findings are part of the WHO's Global Youth's Tobacco Survey released today. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
The World Health Organization report released Wednesday in Harare revealed that 20% of adolescents in Zimbabwe are consumers of tobacco products. The Global Youth Tobacco Survey in Zimbabwe targeted youth between 13 and 17 years old. It was funded by the United States Center for Disease Control, CDC, and the World Health Organization. The WHO's Dr. Anderson Chimusoro urged the government to increase public awareness of the health issue.
The main worry is that this is almost equivalent to the result that we have in the demographic and health survey, which shows that 22% of adult population is estimated to be using tobacco products. I've got a number of issues that we think as WHO the country can take on board to help us in this issue. We propose that the government should promote and strengthen public awareness on tobacco control issues, including in schools.
The survey revealed that some youths smoke while on school premises. In Zimbabwe, smoking and selling tobacco products is prohibited among children under the age of 18. Public health specialist Shungu Munyati, who headed the research, said President Robert Mugabe's government must enforce laws on smoking if stamping out smoking among school-age youths is to be achieved. But she says since tobacco plays a role in Zimbabwe's economy, it might be a problem.
It's a conflict of interest. The argument has always been, yes, we are growing tobacco, but we are growing tobacco. It's not for our consumption. We are growing tobacco so that we can market it and sell it out there and have revenue for the country. But at the same time, if we're just growing and sending it out, fine, but we also manufacture the cigarettes here. There's a market. So it's a dilemma that is faced by Zimbabwe.
Tobacco is one of the cash crops that Zimbabwe's tattered economy is depending on for recovery. It contributes 8.5% of Zimbabwe's gross domestic product. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rashad Smith, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the upcoming presidential runoff elections and parliamentary elections in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests analyze the ballot. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butter here to remind you that February is Black History Month here in the United States. And starting February 1st, we will begin our Black History Month series and daily quiz. Listen every morning as we profile historical African-American and African individuals and events. You can win a special Daybreak Africa calendar and other VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. We will select a winner each morning from among the correct answers.